Hi, everybody. Welcome back. I'm Brian.
I'm Rui.
And we're going to give you a small demo. This demo is the one that didn't quite work out previous to last session. And that's going to be the demo for voice. It's going to be a high-level look at the functionality and features. It shouldn't be anything new for anyone. It should just be information that hopefully is a refresher prior to this course and clear up any questions that you may or may not have. But we don't have actual internet here. We don't actually have a PBX. We don't actually have any voice type stuff. So we're just going to show what's configured and how to do a new configuration. So with that...
You know what, Brian? Maybe if we have some time, we can show the poster as well. What do you think?
If there's time, sure.
Yeah.
If not, we'll definitely get to it after lunch.
Oh, definitely.
Okay. So looking at the control panel. Everybody's familiar with the control panel. It's nothing new, nothing fancy. We have the voice routing. Well, it is fancy, don't get me wrong, but it's not new fancy. It's old fancy. It's the same fancy that we had.
New fancy, so, old fancy.
Okay. Yeah, exactly. And in this configuration, we have two locations. And we'll see this more when we get into our configuration, when we get into our demo on call features, as well as for CAC. It'll make somewhat more sense. But we have two sites. We have a Rome site and we have a Redmond site. And you can see, as we look to make a site dial plan, if we try to do so, we could make one for Rome, and we could make one for Redmond, which is the on-prem, or we can make user-based dial plans, which is what we have here. So again, conceptually, you start at the bottom, user dial plans. User dial plans are supersede pool, which supersedes site, which supersedes the global. So if you don't have any of those apply to you, the global dial plan is what applies to you. Right? So in this particular case, we'll see the Redmond dial plan. And the Redmond dial plan has things that are specific to Redmond. Because remember, this used to be called the location profile. So what this is, which I know makes confusion from a sense of we have location services within Link, but it's now called dial plan, but it's specific to that person, where they sit, where they operate, how they dial. Think of it as, when I dial a 7-digit number, what do I expect to happen? And if that's the same for everybody in your company, it's very possible that the global dial plan could work for everybody. But if, let's say, I sit in my office in Redmond and I hit 0 and I expect to get the Redmond operator, yet if I'm in Rome and I hit 0, I expect to get the Rome operator, that's two distinct differences in normalization, which means we're going to have to end up having two different dial plans. So, very typical for multi-sites. So if we're looking here at the Redmond operator, when they dial a 04, that translates to this plus 1425 number. Same thing with the Rome operator. If the Rome person dials 03, then we get the Rome operator. Now, the interesting thing here is, could this be a single dial plan? Well, based off operators, yes, because we have different operator codes for different locations. 04 is Redmond, 03 is Rome. We're not taking a generic 0. But we do have differences in 7 digits. So if I dial 7 digits in Rome, I don't want to be a plus 1425. That doesn't mean anything to me. Yet, if I dial a 4-digit extension in Redmond that starts with a 4, to me, that means it's going to be a Redmond number, a 4. And then let's go ahead and open that up, and we can show you how that works. Similar to what we were looking at before. What? The wheel on the mouse, be careful when you're in here, because it doesn't necessarily bring down the list. It changes things that are in here. All right. So this one, we're saying we want it to start with a 4, be 4 digits long, remove 2 digits, and then add additional information to it. So we're taking, we're using the 4 as an identifier. And maybe we want to remove 2 digits, 1 digits, no digits, depending on how it looks. But if you change through this, you can actually see the pattern to match dynamically changes. So we have 4 digits, and then, starting with a 4, followed by 3 digits. However, if we remove 1, we see the 4 flips to the outside of the prints. And exactly what we were talking about before. If it's outside of the prints, it's excluded. If it's inside the prints, then it's part of that expression of that wild. The $1 is what we're looking at.
It's part of the expression that matches.
Right. Part of the expression that we're going to pass on to our translation.
To the translation rule.
So if we want to move 2, you'll see it's a slash 4 plus the next digit. And then in the parens is only the single digit. And you may say, well, that's not the parens. And you say, yeah, well, it really is. What we have here is, and I don't know if this will blow, it doesn't, is this is a squiggly paren, this is a non-squiggly paren. So number of digits are held within squiggly parens. The entire expression that we want to be sent over as our variable is set here.
Yeah, the squiggly parens basically specify the number of digits to.
That's right. So if you look at it this way and think about it this way, visually this doesn't work. Don't do this when you're at home, right? But because this is inside of a paren, and this is inside of a paren, and it's the first dollar within this matching pattern, this value is $1. Now, if I had something else here and I had another slash D2 of some sort.
Inside of parentheses?
Huh? Then this would end up being $2. So if I wanted $2 to be what matched and I stripped off $1, that could be what it did too. But it all has to do with the parens or what validate the parens. And you'll see a lot of that in address book normalization when we start saying we want pieces. We want to take $1 to $2 to $3 to all be the exact same thing. Okay. So back to where we were. The translations of what's happening. Now, the internal extension is an interesting box. It can be used, it cannot be used. If it's checked, then we consider this, it gets that extra pass of things that go through. And we try this pattern with, wait for it, not that one, wait for it, external access number, there it is, within our dial plan. If I had a 9 here, I could check this box, and it would not look to run through the pattern options of 9 first and then this and see if that matches. If internal extension is checked, it means it's not an outside number, so we don't. If it starts with the 9, it's not going to be something that matches this. I've been typically instructed, told, encouraged by Microsoft to say people within Microsoft, not Microsoft in general, but colleagues, there we go, that it's not necessarily, it makes things more complicated to use that feature. So you can click that box if you want. It doesn't do anything unless the external access number is configured within your dial plan. Again, that's dial plan specific and whatnot. Well, there's other ways to accomplish the exact same goal with the 9 and the question mark, so you get the or, if there, if not there, kind of concepts. So
essentially, there's multiple ways to shoot yourself in the foot.
Oh, there's always. We can make dial plans as complex as we want them to be, or as simplistic as possible with meeting the requirements. One of the key things that we typically look at when we're making normalization plans is the translation pattern the same between multiple normalization rules? So if this Rome operator, Redmond, and Rome all ended up translating to the same thing, then there should be, well, there is, there, but there's a way to make all three of these roll up because we can use ORs. So if the $03 or for blah, 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 or this thing translated to our translation pattern. We could conceptually do that with a lot of ORs. Again, we can sometimes make it too complex, and then right. Complexity is not a good thing when we're trying to troubleshoot normalization.
So what you're saying is basically you could use one normalization rule for all three patterns.
As long as the translation pattern, the end result is the key.
Is the same.
It has to be the same because that's what we're translating to. If it's Absolutely. Not, then it's not going to work.
Of course, if it's not, it's not going to work.
Right.
But if it's the same, if the pattern that you're going to translate into is the same, you could use one normalization rule or you could use three normalization rules.
It comes down to a couple things. Comfort level and number of normalization rules. Now, the number is high when we get to the number that is before it starts impacting performance on the server. I'm sure in environments in your labs, you've heard the dreaded beeps, beeps, beeps when you're trying to do a PS10 dial-out and things are processing. More than likely, then that's a lab or a pilot. That's because your hardware is underperformed. Or we can't get to the MRAS. That's possible, too. When we have too many normalization rules, we're going to get those beeps, too, because it has to process that through all of those normalization rules what you're doing. So keep that in mind. There is a potential impact if we have too many normalization rules. Also say that this 9, interestingly enough, doesn't get factored into when we do the test case information. So if I come here and I do a 9, blah, 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 no numlock, 9, blah, 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 and I run it, it may very well work, but it won't show that it works because the 9 is only being taken into account once it's used through this external access. So there are a couple caveats to using it. You can, cannot, it's up to you, but yeah, it is what it is.
Yeah, and that 9 there for the prefix is just to mimic the PBX.
That's right. That's what it was put there for.
Yeah, the PBX functionality. So if you want, like you said, if it's too hard to retrain your users to not dial a 9, you can just put that there and then just keep the same functionality. But
maybe
it made
more sense to see if we could show this. Let's say I went to here. I added the 9, I hit OK, so the out's there. And then I do, but it won't show her. We can't get to the bottom. So part of our issue with our technical difficulties is the bottom of our screen's cut off, and we're not quite getting it up there. But if I dialed 903, which would be 903 here and go, what shows on the bottom is that that translates and that works. But if I were to do it up here at the top, it would fail. And that's because, again, our test patterns and things don't take into account the external access prefix configuration that we have there. So anyway, that is what it is. So when we go down to Rome, we'll look at what's different between Rome and what's different between Redmond. And really, one, they don't have 7-digit dialing. It's just removed. Now, if they dialed a lot of 425 numbers, would it be applicable? Maybe. You know, it's really your call on your environment. It goes back to what Rui was saying about knowing what your people dial and how they dial and what their patterns are today. Because if they're used to their PBX accepting 7 digits in Rome and actually dialing a US number, well, then we want to provide that same functionality. It's probably not the case, and probably more similar to in here, where we have our national dialing is where we start at 0, and then it has to be a 1 through 9, and off we go. And our international dialing is a 0-0, and that's how it's specific to Rome. Those are, as they are created today, are created as user dial plans. If we wanted to globally set those on an entire site, we could. And we could say, you know what, for Rome, we want anybody that's within Rome to end up getting those dial plans. Now, one thing that we'll notice is that we do not have any dial plans in our new one. It doesn't copy anything. But if we want to copy over everything that's in Rome, we can. This is a copy process. And you may say, why? What's the point of copying? And it's because they are independent to one another. So if you make a change in one, you're going to have to make the change to all of them, even if you use the select method to pull this information over. But just as simple as that, I've now created a Rome site-based dial plan. Okay, that's great. The other thing that we want to point out is that there's one here called a pool. Now, a pool, you may say, what is that? What is a pool to me? Now, there's different types of pools. And if we look at our registrar, there's the pool of the actual pool where everybody lives. So they're within a site, but maybe we don't want everybody in the site. Maybe that specific pool in a site has different dial plans. Or you'll notice gateways. So it's not just the registrars of pools, but the gateways. This is really important for inbound normalization. So let's say this Rome gateway, anytime anything came over, would always be sending us 10-digit numbers. So we would need to go ahead and say, okay, anything, which is always 10 digits, or maybe it's anything at all, we just need to add a plus 2. We'll go ahead and add a plus 1 for North America if it's a 10-digit inbound number. And again, that would be all based off of what we were expecting. Oops. From the inbound normalization of that trunk. So that can be trunk-based normalization from inbound normalization specific to a carrier, an ITSP, maybe it's a PBX, however it's communicating to you, that's what that is. That's what pool's for when you do PST and gateway. So that's great too. So we can do a PST and gateway, we can do an actual pool as far as users on a pool, and you'll notice looks just like a PST and gateway pool, but it says registrar. Then we have a site, and then we have user, and then, of course, global catches anything that we don't catch. It's important to know that that gateways are associated with sites. So if you have a site dial plan, you are going to get that gateway's going to get his normalization via that site. If you don't have a site dial plan and you only had, like we originally had, user dial plans, then the global is what's going to catch. It's going to go through the global policy. Okay, so those are dial plans. Again, dial plans all have to do with when I dial a number, what happens to that number in order to get normalization to work?
Yeah, the dial plans is about normalization of the number.
Yeah. The other key piece that's in here is your dialing conferencing. We get more into that, and we've got to the past. We talk about this all the time. This is our free form field that something needs to be here. in order for us to associate it to a dial-in conferencing region. It's a number. So if in this case it's Rome, so we're going to Rome dial-in, then that's what we're going to have show up when we do a dial feature of dial-in conferencing. Okay. So off to voice policies. Now remember, voice policies, routes, and PSTN usages, all of them tied together and allow us to keep in mind how things are routing and not routing. So from a voice policy, we have rights, and you'll notice things are broken down into international, local, long distance. Very common. We have our locations and our international, local, and long. Now again, global is your catch-all. Typically, we make it as restrictive as possible so that if we don't associate a user policy, they can't make calls, or they can make only internal calls, perhaps. The big change with our voice policy that we saw, if we can get down that far, which we can, is call forward and simultaneously ring, use what? And again, if they could only call link numbers, this would be our second option. And the third, which is off the screen, shows custom PSTN usages, and then we can pick the usages to use by it. So if we don't want them to be able to forward outside or simultaneously ring outside of the organization, we can set it to link users only. This is also where we'll notice we still have the same calling features. So this is what roles, features, functionality you're adding to yourself. And that's all within your voice policy. In addition to voice policy, the usages are tied there. So right. The usages are where we select. It's also where we make new usages. So there is a PSTN usage tab. It's a view-only, really, tab. It's the PSTN usages are created new here or selected from an existing order. The order does matter here. So the Redmond local usage will be tried first, followed by the long-distance usage, followed by the international usage. That's completely up to you how that's done. Typically, we have an emergency. If we're not using LIS and the E911, we want to have emergency on everybody. It really depends on your configuration how that goes.
Well, the thing is, multiple of these routes could match the number, right?
Mm-hmm.
So the order is important because it's going to pick the first one that matches.
That's right, because we could have Redmond Local 2. That maybe it's not our most ideal outbound solution, but it's a solution that's for POTS lines tied to a particular gateway. And so if it doesn't reach Redmond Local, but it does meet Redmond Local 2, out Local 2 it'll go. That's important because routes within the routes that we create, let's see if this will show, here are associated trunks that are listed here don't matter their order. Neither does the order of the PSTN usages. Neither does the order of PSTN usages here. None of that matters. The only thing that matters is you have a multiple PSTN usages associated to a voice policy. So this is key. If you care which way that the calls go outbound, then you need to make sure that you have a single usage associated to a single route and then multiple usages tied to a voice policy. That way you ensure that the calls go out to the primary PSTN usage first, followed by the secondary. If you tie multiple routes into a single PSTN usage, then you're going to end up with round-robining type functionality where it's just going to pick one of the routes and there's really no logic. It's not even round-robin. It's illogical how things will flow. But if that's okay, whatever's available, if you go out one route versus another you don't care, then you could do it that way. That's typically not the case.
Yeah, the order is not set, if I recall correctly, but it'll try it. And if the first gateway doesn't respond, then it'll try the second gateway.
So that's always. Yeah. But we don't know which is the first gateway it's going to respond to, and the second one, we don't know which one's going to try. It's just the way that it works from a PSTN usage perspective. So, again, the key is if I'm in a PSTN usage and I have multiple routes selected here that all match the same pattern, I can't guarantee which route it's going to take. However, if I have multiple PSTN usages that look identical, so let's say I did a Redmond Local 2, which if we look at Redmond Local, he's using the Redmond Local route. Okay. If I did a new Redmond Local and it's got 2, and I select the Redmond Local route, that is now a new usage from a preference of how we're going to look at things. And you'll notice I'm going to try Redmond Local, then Local Long Distance, then International, then Local 2. That's not what I want. Then I change it. One of the complaints has been, well, then why have the ability to move these routes up and down if the routes here don't matter? It's for your personal preference on how things look. That's it. That's what they're for. And then finally, your PSTN usage. And again, here we see what policies are associated to, what routes were associated to. If we come in here and edit, we can't. There's nothing to do here. It's a view-only view. One other concept we would want to touch on that you may run into is your route patterns here. They're very similar, if you notice, as regex, as far as what we're looking at. So a plus 1, 4, 2, 5 could also be followed with something like or. Maybe we're doing a
plus 2, 0, 6.
Plus 1, 2, 0, 6. So we're doing numbers within here. Off we go, and numbers are matched and found. We can see which usages are associated within this particular route here and what gateways are particular. Again, with the gateways are the same things. If you have one route with multiple gateways, we're round-robining. That actually does round-robin selectively. If you need to make sure that it always goes out one trunk and then goes out a different trunk, well, then you need to have multiple routes and then associate those multiple routes to the multiple policies and the PSTN usages, and then, yeah. And that's how you can see how this multiple web that Rhea was showing of the different circles can be as complex as it can be, because you can have multiple ways to get to the same thing through multiple routes. So press caller ID is still here. If we push that and we dial in this number, anybody with an outbound dialing through this route will pass their caller ID as whatever you type in here. It can be anything. Make sure your carrier accepts it, because if you type in something that shouldn't be there, sometimes you get dinged, FYI. Beyond that, nothing's changed. Nothing's really changed within the routes and how things are configured within policies, routes, and usages. And finally, on our trunk config, we talked about this slightly, that the trunk configuration has some new options. You'll notice there's a bunch of new breakouts that happened. Refer is broken up into not just on or off. Now it's being able to let the gateway deal with it or a third-party call control of some sort deal with it. We also have the new forward call history and the PAssert identity. Forward call history was important when we wanted to go out a trunk, but we wanted to know who that call was actually coming from, much like Exchange or diversion headers. We needed to know that if somebody called into you from the outside and you had call forwarding on, the call came from your number, was authorized to go out your SIP trunk. It wasn't really coming, even though it looked like caller ID from the outside. That was a problem on a lot of non-link people that did have link trunks that weren't on the OIP, because they would receive the call, and it would look like, because of the caller ID, that it was coming from an outside number, let's say a mobile number of some Bob that was using the trunk to make an outside call. That's not right. But what was really happening was Bob was calling Mary, and Mary was then ringing her cell phone or a different outside number using the call. That information was lost prior to 2013 being able to enable it, and we had to use a gateway to capture that.
And then we have certified gateway.
Yeah, certified gateway. Then we have these usages. And people say, well, what are the usages here for? Well, this happens to do with inner trunk routing. So what this is if a call comes in this trunk, what trunk is he able to go out? So if I get an inbound call from, let's say, my PBX, and if this is my PBX trunk, can he dial long distance? In this case, there's nothing associated with those routes, but yes, he could. And so he does a secondary lookup from a PSTN usage when we're doing almost like a U. Think of it as a U-shaped. We're coming in from one side, hairpinning on link, and coming right back out link. What can he go back out as? That's what associated PSTN usages are. And then finally, we have our new called in and called number translations. So the called number, who is the caller, and the calling number translations, okay, it's very confusing because you're trying to figure out who's called, who's calling, who's the caller, who's the call-id, but calling number translation rules and called number. So calling number is the originator, and what do you want to do to their phone number prior to sending it outbound? And called is my outbound. Who am I making calls to, and what do I want to do? And when you do your phone test, you can type in the number of the calling or the called. Again, I'm not going to see my results, but that's where it would happen at.
And this is the purpose for this is for gateways who require the phone number to be in a specific format when they receive it.
That's so, right. Either the same number all the time or their four-digit extension or whatever. We can handle it right on link rather than passing it to a gateway to handle that first.
Particularly if the gateway doesn't understand E164 format, so we can translate it.
Our last tab, which has always been here, is our test voice routing. We'll just touch on quickly that if you created something in this test voice routing plan, it's almost identical to what's happening here, except that you're telling the system what you expect things to be. So the expectation of translation based off the dial plan and the global policy, and what route and usage you expect it to go out. The reason you want to do this, not only does it stay static, you don't lose it every time you close a control panel, but It allows you to, anytime you make any changes to the system, to go back to this page and say, you know what, run all test cases and make sure they're still valid prior to me committing any changes within the voice. Everything's very important. If you kill a voice calls for the president because you made a typo or a mistake or didn't realize that a route was being used in one way or another and you removed it, it's important to make sure that those calls still go. So very common will be an internal extension, it'll be a local number, a long distance, an international, special case numbers, things of that nature. That's what we'll put in test voice routing and make sure that they still work.
And it's a good way to test that any new changes you make doesn't conflict with the existing configuration.
Okay, and with that, that's actually what we wanted to run through. I know it was a little pressed, but we wanted to make sure you got this, most of it, because you don't see it all, because you don't see the bottom, but you see the majority of the demo. So we can all smile about that. And with that, we're going to take a meal break. So we will see you all back in about 60 minutes. If you want to take a meal break as well, great. Otherwise, we will see you then. Thank you so much.
All right, thank you.